This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
What the Tech?
Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
I'm so
You're so
happy
cheerful.
I am. I'm very cheerful. Well, it's election day.
What's wrong
day.
With you?
It's election day. Right. I got my sticker.
I do too.
Do you see it here? Well, I got four of them.
Okay, but that sounds like voter fraud, Andrew.
Well, isn't that how it works? You go in, and then you come out, you get a sticker, and the more stickers you get, the more you win at this game of voting, right?
Oh, boy.
So you just go in and just say, I would like to vote, please, and then you collect all the stickers.
If I thought I could make a difference and vote all day long, I would.
I have, you know, they're very stingy with these stickers here in New York. I don't know if
Well, I guess they're not, Andrew. You have four of them.
I do, because I stole these stickers. No, I used my child, and I said, I would like this sticker for my child, please, and they gave me four stickers.
Wow.
Yeah. So, this is how fraud is done, apparently.
Yep.
I thought the whole point of voting was to get the sticker, and I generally think some people vote only for the sticker.
I was told there were going to be cookies, like when you give blood.
they lied.
It was disappointing.
Yeah, they lied. It was just a bowl of limes at the end. They just hand you a lime. Guys, a lot to talk about. Obviously, it's election day here in the States. We're not going to talk about politics, but go out and vote if you're voting. You're eligible to vote here in this country. Go out and vote. If you're not, then don't vote. Just watch the news and complain like everybody else. We have so much to talk about. I had a couple questions for you. And last week, I was shocked at the amount of emails, the amount of feedback I got regarding my issues with Windows 10.
Yep.
And unanimously, I had the same response from everybody on how to fix my issue. And unanimously, my response back was exactly the same for every single message.
You've tried this and it does not work.
No, it's not even an option. And I'll go into why. And I think there's a lot of confusion because it's Windows 10 and it's Windows 10. It's not another name for Windows, even though it's a different version of Windows. It's still Windows 10. I don't know if this is a good or bad. And we've discussed the PR, the marketing issues that may arise from this if they just stick with Windows 10. So I wanted your opinion on this, and I had a couple other topics, and I wanted to read some of the questions that people sent. But before we do that, let's take a moment and thank our amazing sponsor, and that's Casper. Guys, we have been discussing Casper mattresses on the show for years. Paul has a Casper. When I stayed at his house, I slept on a Casper in the guest room. It was a perfect night's sleep. I have a Casper I've been sleeping on for years, and almost everybody that I know that is buying a new mattress is buying a Casper. I think some of it has to do with me, to be honest. I constantly recommend Casper mattresses to people. I'm always suggesting a Casper mattress to people, and they're going and buying Casper mattresses. So go and check them out. This is a great offer that they have for you guys. 100 days, no commitment. You get your money back, 100% money back after 100 days of sleeping on this mattress, which is great. You could try it out, see if it works for you, see if it doesn't work for you. And you just return it if it doesn't work. It's high-quality mattresses, and they have a great offer. Go to casper.com/Andrew. Get $50 off your purchase when you go to Casper. $50 off when you go to casper.com/Andrew and use the offer code Andrew at checkout. I want to thank Casper for supporting the show, for, of course, supporting the GFQ Network. Guys, if you're watching this live, and I hope my engineer is watching live, our machine just crashed for the live feed. So, if it's possible, Suncast, with the magic of the 21st century, could you please change our main feed to be live stream? Thank you. So, Paul, as we try to correct this problem, I wanted to talk to you about a couple things here. One, I'm gonna go into my issues with. I'm gonna go talk about my issues with Windows at the end of the show. But I want to talk to you about Dell working on an Intel-based Windows phone. Mm-hmm. Could it happen, Paul? Could this be it?
No. So, I mean, they're not working on it now. This is a previous project that was canceled, probably when Intel canceled their phone chip. So, I think the initial theories were that maybe this was the Surface phone that everyone thinks is going to happen and might have been like an Intel device, but I believe it's a Dell device. So no.
Why Intel? And what chip are they using? What chip is it? Because the last I remember, they were killing their mobile, they were slowing it down. Yeah,
they killed off the Atom chip that would have went into phones.
Yeah.
Earlier this year. So at the time, I wrote an article where I said, this has some big impact on the Surface phone, if Microsoft intended to make an Intel-based version of it, because obviously an Intel-based version of a Surface phone would be interesting because it could run real Windows apps, right, at least when docked with a big display and everything. So I think Dell might have been working on one as well.
Okay. Now, this is not going to be that cool device. We always talk about Continuum and the possibilities of Continuum mm-hmm. with Windows Phone, and that's really the one thing that stands out for me is Continuum and possibly making this thing a all-in-one device. Microsoft yep. just released the Surface Studio, which I got a lot of crap for this week on my commentary okay. about it, which I don't think I said yep. anything bad other than this is a very industry device. It's not for the consumer. If you are, you're probably in a minority if you are just an average Joe buying this thing. But when we talk about the Surface lineup, we're talking about premium devices, high quality, and something unique. I mean, they all have some unique feature.
Yeah, yeah. They all have some sort of form of transforming capability, right? And so when you think about what a Surface phone might be, were they to make such a device, you could picture it being what HP calls a 3-in-1 device, which is something that you can dock at a desktop, turn it into a desktop computer, it can be a phone, and you could dock it wirelessly or wired yeah. through a laptop form factor as well, and it becomes like a laptop.
Could that be? I mean, that would, in my eyes, that would be the Surface device. And working with yeah. Intel, that Surface phone, working with Intel would be a key to all yeah. of this.
Yeah, it's the only way it makes sense.
Yeah. Dell working on an Intel-based chip can... I mean, could they possibly do something with their lineup of devices? I mean, well, is that something that's in? I don't know. For Dell to invest.
Well, first
time
of all,
in the
effort, this is not happening, right? So
yeah.
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's over. It's hard to say what could happen in the future, right? Intel got rid of these chips. They don't really have any plans for doing this again. The problem with Continuum on Windows phones is it gives you kind of the worst of both worlds, right? It's this phone that can turn into a PC, but it's a phone platform that has no apps, and it's a PC platform that has no apps. So it doesn't really.
I mean, I think it's interesting that Dell tried to kind of get into this game where they had an Intel-based chip for this phone that they were going to put out, and obviously this was something that they were working on, but. Yeah. I wonder what the long-term vision would have been for this. Is it the same vision that we have where we have this idea that it's just one device and you just pop it into all these things? You may have this laptop and you may have a monitor. So depending on the room that you're in, you just connect it somehow and you're just working off of that.
Yeah. You know what, though?
How about your TV?
But it's a very forward-leaning idea.
Is it that forward-leaning?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Because... one of the things I found in my own existence, if you try to do something where you remove a device from the equation, right? It's nice in some ways to consolidate. But you always lose something in that transition. And so you could do something like, I really like the way that text looks on an Amazon Kindle, but the Kindle devices don't have access to all the reading content that Amazon provides. And mm-hmm. so I find myself having to carry two devices when I travel. So you bring a Kindle and like an iPad mini, or maybe you could bring like a Fire tablet, whatever. That's not very efficient. And so eventually you decide, well, I'm just going to bring the iPad because the iPad Amazon Kindle app runs everything that Amazon offers. Why carry two devices? And the reading experience isn't that great, but that's kind of what you do. And those trade-offs and your ability to make them is what determines whether or not this stuff can be successful. Yeah. I just think that like a phone that can transform into other devices is kind of a bridge too far at this point. It's just not a very good phone because Windows Phone is terrible. And it's not a good computer because only being able to run universal Windows platform apps is not great. And this is not going to happen. And so we're going to continue to see these hybrid devices, like the Google Pixel C is arguably a hybrid device. It's a tablet. It's sort of a computer. Chromebook with Android apps is another example. It's a computer, but it always also runs these mobile apps. It's kind of cool. Surface devices transform between tablet and, you know, laptop type form factors. And I don't, to date, most of these things have not been super successful because they're not very good at everything, you know, and they're not typically excellent at any one thing either. And I think that's kind of the problem. And so,
you know, do they have to be really good at everything? I mean, I'll give an example, right? This laptop, which I'm going to post a review of next week on the show. We're going to do a live Q&A, I guess, about this thing because you saw it and, you know, it's not terrible. You played around with it for a couple minutes, and I would say for $250, it's a great laptop to have because you could throw this thing around. It does everything you need it to do. But right. But that mentality of does it need to do everything really well? Probably not. It really comes down to one thing, and that's the price, right?
Depends on your need.
Yeah.
Right. It depends on your needs, I should say. you know, for me. If I travel, you know, when I travel, I bring a phone. I bring a little tablet for reading mostly and for movies or something, you know, because I'm on the road. And then I bring a laptop because I have to get work done. And the combination of those things, it's not a lot of weight.
Yeah.
You know, two of them use the same cables for charging and stuff. So I'm not bringing a lot of redundant things. The right tool for the job.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
We always get back to this, the whole Surface device, the whole Surface phone, because it's so fascinating that so many people are interested in it, but that's kind of, I mean, even now, right, even with the idea that this device is not happening, it still looks really realistic in their lineup. When you look at the Surface lineup and the devices that they're adding, it just fits it perfectly. They have the tablet, they have the laptop, they have the, now they have the all-in-one. Sure. What are they going to put next? The tower, the consumer device, the phone? The toaster oven.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, hopefully not. It fits in conceptually, but it remains to be seen whether, like, the Surface Studio actually even makes any sense as a product. I don't think it does. As beautiful as it is, I don't think there's any market for this thing.
So I'm ripping off my voting. You upset me so much. I'm ripping this thing off. So we were talking about this, and a lot of the argument that I heard positive that was positive, not the it looks cool so I want it, you guys are idiots, but people within the industry that use these very expensive illustration devices, you know, these tablets.
I don't care
screens.
About those people. No, I mean, listen, those people are a very small minority. That's not a market. It's not a market for a company like Microsoft that sells to mass markets. To date, this market has been serviced by very high-end expensive solutions, whether we're talking about software like the Photoshop, Creative Studio, or Creative Cloud stuff, or we're talking about hardware, you know, Cintiq and the Wacom tablets and so forth. Not by Microsoft. So I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm not saying their needs are not, you know, there. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that's not a mass market. It doesn't matter.
It's not a mass market at all. But the argument about pricing and how expensive – for them, it is not an expensive device. And it's actually cheaper than it would cost to get, you know, the computer plus the screen plus it would just –
Except now they're running Windows, which they don't use. So I hear you. You just spent the whole morning looking at a picture of a blue screen.
I did.
You know, I this is what happens.
Yeah.
I'm literally not saying the Mac is perfect, but – I think for those people, it's the devil they know.
Yeah.
You know?
It's an interesting discussion. I'm curious. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that.
I don't get it. I just don't understand it.
I'm curious to see how the lineup changes. You know, what the feature of the Surface lineup is. Because they're all very expensive devices from top to bottom.
I should look this up. I'll just look this up without. So I read this car review column in the New York Times every Friday. I really like it. The guy who does it is awesome. And he makes great videos. And so he does video versions of the reviews. I'm trying to talk and look this up at the same time, which is really smart. It's called Driven. And let me see if I can find it. It's like New York Times. And his name is, what is his name? Tom Volk or something like that. Anyway, his car reviews are great. And they're really, I look forward to Friday for this reason. But yeah, they don't have the newest one here, unfortunately. So anyway, the most recent car that he reviewed, though, was some Gullwing. Or like, you know, the doors kind of open like this, yeah. And it was like a $216,000. I don't even remember what it was. I don't care because I'm never going to own such a vehicle. So you can kind of look at these car reviews and you're like, well, they have expensive cars like Mercedes and Hyundai Genesis and Porsche 911, you know. And then there are like normal cars like Mini Clubman and, you know, various Hondas and whatever. And then there are like these cars that are just unobtainable.
Yeah. You know?
And that's what the Surface Studio is. No one is not going to look at one of these things, just like no one would look at a Lamborghini or a Ferrari, which this guy has reviewed for some reason this year, and not say, wow, that's really beautiful. It's not practical. It's not for you. It's not for anybody. It's for such a limited audience.
Yeah, listen, I don't know. I mean, or the argument is that this is a device to kind of tell the other OEMs, hey, listen, this is the direction you should go in. These are the type of devices that you should be making. More of a reference type device than a, hey, we're putting this on the market. Because the same argument was said about the Surface when it originally came out. That people were saying it's too expensive. And the point of this is not to piss the OEMs off, but it's the point is to guide them in the direction that they want to be in. And I think some of that is true with this device. But I would love to know how many they've sold.
I really don't. I'm reaching the point of no return with this thing.
Yeah.
A device like a Surface Book is expensive, given what it is. It's expensive. You could call it an aspirational device. Have we seen any PC makers copy this thing? No. Actually, we haven't. Will they? I guess we'll wait and see. I don't know. Not so far. The pricing on the Surface Studio is so far out of whack. It's not even aspirational. It's pointless. It's non-existent. You know, part of the way that Microsoft should be inspiring PC makers is to show them that they can build devices that are beautiful and useful and actually affordable by real people too. It can't, you know, what are we going to make the next one out of like diamonds or something? Like, how do we make it more expensive? It's ridiculous.
Corinthian leather, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. Corinthian leather.
That's what you need to put on it. I think it's fascinating. I think the lineup is interesting and it was a hot topic last week as far as our stance on this and where we think what this device is. I was shocked at how many people said, I want this device, and I'm not an illustrator. I'm not a graphics guy. I want this device. And I said, you know what? Thank God for you. If you actually go and buy this thing, Microsoft should throw in, I mean, everything else.
You should get Office 365 for free.
Everything for the rest of your life you should get for free because you are a demo that I don't think that they're considering. And if the consumers actually buy this thing, that's unbelievable. So you got the Google Home, correct? You got it last week.
I did.
Oh, you did. Okay. So I'm dying to know what
you're not going to find out from me because I today brought it to the post office and sent it back.
You sent it right back. So if you go to Therat.com, you have a post on Therat.com regarding this. Mm-hmm. Tell me.
Good luck finding it, by the way. It's
buried. I know. I saw it this morning. The Dongle World. I like that article, by the way. Talk to me about
the faux outrage.
Yeah. Talk to me about the device. I'm curious why so quick.
Right. Well, my wife and I did not like the Amazon Echo for starters. We didn't find it to be particularly useful. A lot of reasons for that. I sort of do recognize that this market for chatbots and for voice-based personal digital assistants is a thing. And by the way, they're the same thing, right? It's just a different way of interacting with the same thing. I don't know about you, but I don't do this kind of interaction ever. Well, that's not completely fair. I very rarely do this type of interaction. The one place I do it is in Duolingo. They have chatbots for learning French. And actually, I do that every day. I find it to be frustrating, you know, because it's like an Infocom game. If you don't respond exactly right, you're not getting anywhere. The Amazon device was problematic because it's a home device and it's really just a front end for buying stuff from Amazon, and then, you know, hey, play a song. Hey, you know, buy me something at Amazon.
Almost everybody that I know that has that device uses it to play music. That is the only reason why they have it. They tell it, you know, and I do it on my, first of all, I do it on my Amazon Fire TV because it has, ooh, that wasn't good.
Sorry.
It has, it has Alexa built in. So I'll say, play music for brunch, and it'll compile a mix of songs for brunch. It's really good at that. Other than that, I have no other, reason to use it.
That's a nicety, right? Not a necessity.
No, yeah.
And if your goal is to play music, I mean, that's great. It seems like that's what a lot of people do use these things for. I already have 150 ways to play music in my house. I've got Sonos. I've got Chromecast all over the place. Mobile apps on different phone platforms. I've got Apple TV and Roku and on it goes. I get music everywhere. I never actually listen to it, so I'm not really sure what the point is, but it is all over my house. But the Google Home, you know, you have to sort of believe that at some point Google Home or Google will surpass like the Amazon Echo. Like, they're going to do it. It may not happen right away. I mean, Amazon has a lot of skills that third-party developers have added to that device. It's unusually popular for an Amazon device. But it's going to happen, right? I think we all sort of understand that's going to happen. This first one is, it's a little bit of a lie. I mean, from a hardware perspective, this device is a Chromecast, right? With two microphones and a cute little deodorant looking.
So essentially that's what it is on the inside. It's a Chromecast.
Yeah.
It's a Chromecast with a mic.
Okay. You know, whatever. That's fine.
Yeah.
It will work a lot like the Amazon Echo, which I just told you we don't like. But the hope of this thing is it's the Google Assistant. And so this thing will be out in the world with you all the time. It will be on your phones. It will be in your car. It will be, you know, you don't have to be in the living room or whatever room you have this thing to use it. And there's some benefits to that, right? There's some benefits to, you know, just to use this tired example I used yesterday, probably on the other podcast, which was something like, hey, you know, Google, what's the traffic like? And it's like, oh, you should go this way and whatever. And then, you know, maybe it doesn't do this now, by the way, I don't think, but, you know, knowing that you asked it this in the home, your phone could then pop up in the car and say, hey, there's an accident. You should do something different. Even if you weren't using the map app at that time, just because it knew you'd already asked about it and that this is something you do every day, that integration becomes really interesting. It doesn't do that yet, but you know, that's beside the point. But you know, the Google device is different from Amazon, right? Because it's not really about purchasing stuff from Amazon. It's not kind of a family device. It's tied to a Google account, which is your account, which is you. And in my house, I have three people now. My son's gone, but four people normally who all have their own Google accounts and sign into Google on the web and on their devices and whatever. And if I tried to add something, a reminder, if I tried to find out what was on the schedule, if I tried to get it to play music, it would do it against the account that was built into that device, which would be, say, like my wife's account. I'm not particularly worried about privacy issues, but I recognize this is a major limitation of this device. This is going to be an issue for a lot of people. It just is. So I just don't think it's ready yet. The other thing I would point out is if you go back and watch that Google announcement for the Google Home and the Google phones they released later, they talk about how this is the only place you can get this. Like, the Google Pixel XL and Pixel are the only phones that have the Google Assistant. And the Google Home device is the only other place to get it. This is where Google Assistant lives. It's not anywhere else. That's a lie. The Google Assistant is in every Android device made. It's in Google Now. It's in the Google search box. It's on the top of your phone home screen. It's exactly the same experience. If you type that microphone icon, it's exactly the same. So I don't even need this device to test it. I can test it on my phones. Yeah. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, yeah.
So spending $157 on nothing.
I get the whole home automation. I get the smarter home mentality. And I have smart lights, but I don't really use it in this with a central hub. I don't see a purpose beyond turning your lights on and off when you come in the house. You know, like I think there's a lot of immaturity in this market right now. And these devices, like the Home and Alexa, you know, the Echo. I think they're cool to have, but people are using them for the simplest of conveniences, like playing music. which you could essentially do that with your phone connected to your Bluetooth speaker. Sure. You know, you could do all of that. The home appliance feature is nifty. It's nifty. It's cool. But beyond that, I don't know who they're appealing to. Who is their market? And why do you need this?
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep.
You know, we talk about Google. We talk about, you know, the car, for example.
Right.
The car, Android Auto, and these apps, this is something that I feel that is going to be very important to have. And they're just, it's very difficult for them to do this right. It's interesting to me that that is a market that I feel technology would really help. The fact that I could have Google Maps on my display, and they can't really crack this. They can't really push, you know, getting this in the car. It's still really half-assed in many cars.
Yeah, I mean, so they just announced that the Google Auto app, which you need to use Google Auto in a car, will now be able to work on its own, meaning you don't need Google Auto in the car. Like, your phone will be the Google Auto interface. And, you know, that's cool. And I think anyone who's used, you know, Google Maps in a car with their phone up on the dashboard or whatever, it's a good, assuming you can see the screen or whatever, it's a good experience. It talks to you. It tells you when to turn. It tells you if it found a better route and all that kind of stuff. There's no doubt that voice interactions with technology is part of the wave that's coming. I mean, it's, you know, we rely on it today in the car already in some ways. I don't know how to explain this. Like, I just kind of don't care about it. I mean, you know, in general. So on a phone, like, I don't want to talk to my phone. I just don't. I'm sorry. I just don't find that to be a good way to interact with it.
See, and I do. And I talk to my phone all the time.
You do. So what do you do? What do you say to your phone? I'm curious about
that. Reminders.
Okay.
Essentially, yeah, that's all I use it for is reminders.
Good. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
I'm really bad at putting stuff in my calendar. So
wait a minute, though. You have a Google phone.
I do.
Or like a Samsung phone.
Yeah.
So when you do a reminder, your reminders are stored in the Google app. Then,
in the Google. Yeah. Right? In Google.
Yeah. Okay.
So I add stuff to my calendar. I'll ask it a question. If I'm looking something up, I'll give an example. I was at the bar. We were trying to come up with who the actor was in some movie. And I won't type it in. I'll just I'll say the word, okay, and then the company's name, because it's going to go off. I'll ask the question, and it'll give me an answer immediately. I mean, just, it just really, And it speaks the answer, yeah.
Yeah.
I use it in those scenarios. Again, a convenience more than anything else. The reminder thing is important for me because I'm terrible at putting stuff in my calendar. So I'll do, you know, meeting invites. I'll set reminders.
But you're still not putting anything in your calendar, right?
No, you are. And yeah, no, you are.
You are.
Yeah, it's all tied because my calendar is Google.
I know that, but so you're saying that the reminders you do through the Google app actually do make it to your calendar?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's great.
They're all
that's
tied.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. So the Google stuff, I use it in that sense, but I'll give an example. We talk about talking to your computer. We've spoken about this for a while, and I couldn't get used to using Cortana, and the way that I kind of played both sides was, well, maybe because I've been in the Mac ecosystem for too long, maybe I'll use Siri more than I'll use, you know, because I don't use my Windows laptop as much. So maybe with Siri, I'll use it. Guess what? It's utterly useless. I don't know anybody using Siri on their laptop. I don't know too many people that use Cortana, to be honest, on their laptop. I don't have a use for it, and I can't. We use computers very differently on a phone and on a desktop. I think that is the thing that's kind of lacking here. Why would you use Siri on a laptop?
You may know more about this than I do, because I just don't use the Mac enough. But on the Windows side, it's kind of interesting. You hit the Windows key and you start typing. And let me just do it because...
What, for search?
Yeah. So why? Yeah. And as I'm hitting the Windows key and nothing's coming up. So...
It pulls stuff up. Yeah.
And you can search. Actually, that's a search. That's actually different than, yeah. So on the Mac, you do, like, I don't know the key, but it's like the Alt key in a Windows keyboard. It's like Alt space or it must be like Command space or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And that brings up whatever the desktop search is.
The Spotlight search, yeah.
Spotlight search. So it works similarly, right, to the Start search in Windows. And then on Windows, you can do, like, I guess it's Windows C. You can, you know, click in the box, obviously. I don't know, my keyboard's like, I wonder if it's dying or something. Nothing's working. And you can bring up Cortana. And it's funny because Cortana actually can search for the same things. Like if I just type in Windows, I get that same exact, it's star search. Like it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think on the Mac, Siri and Spotlight are two different things.
They are. They're totally separate things. So I'll give an example. Totally separate. If I'm searching right now with Spotlight, I put in Terminal.
Yeah.
And it actually pulls up Terminal, and then it looks for, and then it pulls up the dictionary app, so it looks for a definition. Then it goes through my emails. Then it goes to my map, so it's finding Terminal 5, the nightclub, and then suggested websites, Wikipedia, and then suggested videos, web videos. It's not tied with Siri at all. Let me see. Let me ask it. Siri, open up Terminal. Oh, look, it won't work. Siri, open up Terminal. Nope, it doesn't.
You can actually use Siri to launch. No. Okay. So it's like a voice interface to the thing you could type with Spotlight.
Yeah. And I think for me, the reason why I don't type is that I hate typing on glass, and it would take me way longer to write, what's the name of the guy that was in, you know, that movie, when I could just speak it really quickly and find it. It's just more of a convenience.
I'm so used to interacting with computers by typing, I just naturally go to that interface, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I think when it comes to voice and searching and talking to, it's going to take something else.
Here's a typical. All right, but let me give you the Thurrott family typical scenario for needing this functionality. And this is kind of where I think like Cortana or any of these assistants kind of wouldn't show up today. And feel free to prove me wrong. I'm just the way we think, the way we think, the way we do things. We're watching TV at night and some actor or actress is coming into the scene and they look really familiar. So I pause it and I ask my wife the most futile question on earth, because she never knows the answer to any of these questions, which is like, hey, where was that person from over there? She's like, yeah, I don't know. They look familiar.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you find that? Like, how do you find that person, right? And so the way I do it is I open the browser and I type in the name of the TV show or the movie or whatever we're watching. I go to the IMDb page for that thing because it comes up in the search results. I guess I could just go to IMDb first. And then I look at the list. And then I click on the actor or actress. And I look at all the things they've been in. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we watched The Sopranos. They were in The Sopranos or whatever, you know. That's kind of a convoluted way of finding someone. But how would you say it?
Yeah,
like, how would you even say what I just did?
Yeah.
Hey, Google, remember that show? You know, whatever. You know, like I don't – it kind of falls apart.
Well, I've done it. Yeah. So this is what it was. Now I remember. We couldn't come up with the guy that played Spider in Goodfellas, okay? The guy from The Sopranos. Yeah. So I said, the guy that played Spider and was also in The Sopranos, and it pulled it up immediately, Michael Imperioli.
Okay, I was going to say, Google, it seems like Google would be the one that would get that right.
Yeah.
That was Google that did that?
That was Google, yeah.
Yeah, I could picture that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The problem is, though, in many cases, like, but you knew information about it, right? In other words,
what's the name of that? Yeah, yeah.
My wife and I just check out. So we're watching TV and it's like, who's the blonde chick from, what's the TV show we're watching again? you know, like we don't even know what we're doing. Like, I don't know how, you know, it just doesn't seem, unless the thing could read my mind or whatever, but maybe that's part of it eventually. You know, Amazon has a thing where you can bring up, I don't know what they call it, but they have like an overlay that shows you the actors on the screen. You can, you know, select it and go see what else they did. Like that would be pretty great. It's almost like if someone could just crack the living room, we'd be all set.
Yeah. You know? I think, well, let's talk about the living room. This was an interesting story I saw on 9to5 Mac. I'm sorry, Paul. AT&T is reportedly planning to offer DirecTV Now subscribers a free Apple TV or a Fire TV stick. This is exactly what we discussed yesterday, last week on What the Talk. We were talking about, you know, this is the ultimate fantasy where you no longer have to sign up for cable through your cable provider, but you're still getting all the services through them. They give you some set-top box.
So you're saying there's an app.
There is now an app. Yeah. Yeah. So Verizon doesn't have this, unfortunately. I know Time Warner has it, but it's pretty limited. But DirecTV Now is AT&T's service for, you know, DirecTV over the internet. Starts off at $35 a month, which is not bad, and they're giving people a free Apple TV or a Fire Stick to get. I'm thinking about this. You know what? This is how the cable industry kind of, you know, says, hey, guys, okay, we get it. How about this? How about this option? And they're still tying you in at for a monthly fee. I think this is really going to be the future of the living room when you talk about set-top boxes and content. You're always going to be tied to a cable provider at the end of the day. But
yeah. Well, it will be almost like an internet provider, really. Yeah. Like, it seems like all this stuff could just be – it should all – well, it probably already is really behind the scenes. But it should be all like IP-based. It's just internet streaming live or recorded video.
So it is not out yet, apparently. DirecTV Now is not out yet. It's coming out soon. AT&T is preparing to roll out DirecTV Now. The company is looking to give away Apple TVs and Fire Sticks to consumers who sign up for TV streaming. I would imagine that there would just be an app. If you have an Apple TV, just download the app to watch their content. For $35, you get more than 100 channels.
Well,
this is not a bad deal for them.
Well, assuming the channels are...
God, can you imagine if AT&T gets their act together with this because they own DirecTV, do you know how much the up cost of satellites are for them? It would have to be... I mean, it has to be this ridiculous expense to keep these things and, you know, to keep this technology going. If they could,
get rid of it.
If they could slowly... I mean, obviously, it's not going to happen for everybody, but if they could phase out maybe two-thirds... Of their you know, subscribers, it's less maintenance for them. It's less upkeep. Yep. I'm curious as to how good this quality is going to be. DirecTV will give consumers 7 days free as a trial. Consumers who choose not to pay for the trial period could automatically be downgraded to DirecTV Freeview. I guess there's a free service. I don't know what that is. Ad-supported tier with limited content. Interesting. This is very interesting, but this may be the start. You know, maybe.
Well, it's just, I don't know if it's a start. It's a step. I mean, we've seen things like PlayStation View and other services that are kind of, you know, there's little bits and drabs.
It's a bring your own set-top box. I mean, that's the concept behind this. You bring your own device.
But it needs to be like a full solution. Like when Apple started saying live TV, I got a little bit excited. I was thinking there's going to be some, you know, actual live TV on this thing. That'd be incredible. And it wasn't. And I think that it's the missing piece for me. I mean, I could in so many ways imagine getting rid of cable, but some of the things I would miss include, you know, sports.
So let me ask you this, Paul. So when you talk about TV done by Apple, right? Like this is our ultimate thing, Apple or anybody, right? Even Microsoft. Yeah. I would love somebody to do TV.
Sure.
We're not talking about taking the cord from outside and connecting that coax cable to this box. We're talking IP-based television.
Absolutely.
Okay. What if Apple, which, by the way, you can on Apple TV, you could get the Sling TV. Now, I guess DirecTV is going to be on there as well. So you have options.
Sling
for that.
Is such a kludge. Like what I really want is for these, you know, what I think. Well, what
by the way, it's
really
not the same Sling. It's not the same Sling.
OK, well, but the point is, that, you know, the local Fox affiliate, the local NBC affiliate, the local ABC, whoever they are. Their content goes out live over something, you know, over satellite. They have satellite dishes. They have whatever they have. One of the things that they must transmit over is just an internet connection, right? I mean, just have it be available over the internet connection.
Yeah.
You know, that Fios part of the deal of this subscription would be you get live TV of all the major networks locally. You get some slate of, you know, cable packages or whatever you choose what you want. And that's the whole thing. I you know, and then you get pay extra for, like, you know, the HBOs and whatever those premium services are. Yeah. But I just, it's weird to me how old fashioned this stuff is. And I do, you're right that it's happening. I don't remember where I mentioned this recently, but some years ago, our power went out. And so we picked up our phone to call someone. And the phone was dead.
Hmm.
And we're like, well, we have landlines. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Except we didn't have landlines anymore. Fios never told us.
Oh, yeah.
Fios said switch them over. They're just IP like everything else.
It's no copper. And so
we're paying extra for this. Like we pay for two phone lines. Like, we don't have phone lines. We just have, it's like a Skype thing. Like, we're paying extra for nothing.
So that was a major problem with Fios when they started deploying it here in New York. They were cutting your copper line. They weren't just letting the line sit disconnecting the service. Because if you disconnect service, it still has a dial tone. You can still dial 911 from a copper line that has no service.
Yes, yes. You don't need power or anything.
You don't need anything. It's magic. You just connect it. And
it's magic. It's like the oldest technology in the world, and you can reach 911.
Yeah. So on Long Island,
you don't even need power. It's hilarious.
On Long
Island, it works like with pixie dust.
All these homes, you know, Long Island was first. So all these homes got wired for this, and they were cutting your copper line. They were just connecting you to the Fios box. Well, you got about 5 minutes of battery life, right? If there is an emergency, you can still call.
That's true.
To all these people, you know, after a couple of minutes, you're realizing the power's not coming back. You're like, oh, you know what? Let me bring out the old phone, connect it to the jack. You connect it to the jack. Guess what? No dial tone. Because the battery is only good for 5 minutes on this backup
battery.
Dude,
so what I've just described is even worse because we were using the old phones on the wall where they've always been. But inside the house, you know, they went back to the Fios box. They don't go back to the, you know, the copper connection, whatever that might have been. I don't even know what this is. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But it's not actually it's not a line. It's not a landline. It's
IP-based,
the fiber.
Okay, so I think this is how I see Apple playing this. Rather than Apple becoming their own provider, cable provider, right? IP-based content provider. This is how I see this playing out. You choose your provider. Comcast, Time Warner, Verizon, Spectrum, as Time Warner is called now, Spectrum. Whoever your provider is, DirecTV. And they have, and they have all these apps. It's all available on their service. And they are the front end of the service on this device. Right. So they integrate everything throughout the experience of the Apple device. And Amazon could do the same. Google could do the same. They don't have to rely on their apps. They have to rely on the service. So they do whatever they're doing, magic on the back end, but it looks fluid across the platform.
Right.
That's how I see this playing out with the cable providers. Still, again, it's just, I know they don't want to be a dumb pipe, but they're just a dumb pipe. And the layout is all taken care of depending on the device that you're on. And then you decide what kind of device you want.
The problem with a lot of these cord cutting solutions is, you know, the answer if you want live TV, like real live TV, is, you know, put an antenna upstairs somewhere in a window or in the roof or whatever, and you run a cable down to some box that has like an over-the-air, you know, receiver and tune to those special channels. And it's like, no. Like this can't. It's fine that that's there.
Yeah.
But we need like a fully digital internet-based everything.
So here's the problem with this. If you are like me and you're really big on the quality of the content.
Right.
It's going to be very difficult to deliver the same quality content over IP video. IP video done this way, not the way that Verizon does it, not the way that other like U-verse's IP. They're still sending a dedicated stream between, let's say, 8 to 20 megabits a second. Verizon still does a little bit higher than the other ones because some channels don't share their QAMs. They call them QAMs. They don't share it. Yeah. But for Verizon, you know, you're watching an NFL game. You're getting it at 20 megabits a second. If you watch that, let's say there's that Verizon app and you can watch it online, you're watching that at 2 megabits a second. And you know what? Watching sports, not that fun at 2 megabits a second.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not. So this is the uphill battle now. Okay, so fine. It's easy to
get
the content
on. It is. Well, it's a huge problem.
There.
Yeah.
It's easy. And 90% of people will be totally fine. But me, I have a major, major problem watching crappy, low bitrate content on the internet. If I'm paying $60 a month for a service, you know what? I might as well go to cable.
Right.
That's the reality of it. I mean, and someone in the chat just says it. Sports requires 60 frames per second, at least 15. You know what? I would love 15. I would tolerate 8 because nobody's even doing 8. Right now, MLB's doing 5 at 60, and they look pretty decent.
Yeah.
I am one of these people that is really – it bothers me. I know most people don't care about that, but it bothers me. So that's my gripe with this. But this article is interesting that, you know, AT&T is putting DirecTV now on – Apple TV, and they're giving you, I guess, essentially a set-top box. I think that's pretty cool.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Guys, we still have a couple topics left. We want to talk about this, but I want to remind everybody, if you are a fan of what we do and you want to help us continue doing this, go and use our Amazon link. If you bookmark the following link, go to gfq.co/Amazon. That's gfq.co/Amazon. You can bookmark it, and whenever you're making your holiday purchases, which I know a lot of you guys are using Amazon, we get a tiny little credit for every sale. It doesn't cost you anything, but we get it from Amazon. gfq.co/Amazon. If you could bookmark that, that would be wonderful. Someone could post a link in the chat room, and you guys could do it right now. The 121 people in there, that would be wonderful. gfq.co/Amazon. Also, following this, we're going to be doing our bonus show, our Patreon show. It's going to be free for you guys watching this live. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to do What the Talk. If you're not watching this live, you can go to patreon.com/whatthetech and sign up there. You can fund us anything you want, and you get access to all the bonus material that we do here on the show. I wanted to talk to you about one last topic, and it's the feedback I've received from MacBook Pro users, new MacBook Pro users, and yeah. USB-C. You know,
by the way, I don't know if you read The Verge, they've turned into what appears to be a site called MacBook Pro Daily.
Yeah, they hate it.
And every day there's a new editorial about the MacBook Pro.
And how much it sucks. They hate it.
It is. People are losing their shit over this.
Like, which, by the way, I know people in real life. Forget about journalists. Forget about, you know, my friends that work for CNET and all these things. I'm talking about like average everyday people. They are they are really losing their minds over this. I got the best text message. He goes, I want you to show this to Paul. And I said, what is it? He goes, what the F? And he spelled it out. And he sent me a picture, and it's literally him holding 6 dongles.
That's silly. Look, there are some legitimate complaints to be made, and then there's kind of like faux outrage kind of stuff, right? And at some point, you know, you have to kind of wonder like where the truth is, right? So one of the little things that people are freaking out about is doesn't have an SD card slot, right? No. Photographers need an SD card slot.
Yes.
To which I sort of say, do they?
What? I'm fine with that.
I mean, seriously, are you telling me, because I've seen people do this, by the way, and this, you know, you go to a like a professional basketball game, and there's like photographers down at the sidelines or at the, you know, at the court side.
Yeah,
and they got their awesome big cameras, and they're taking photos and everything. And then next to them, there's like a laptop that has like some, like a like a media card reader taped to it or something, which is really funny. But they're taking pictures. They want to get the pictures down to that thing. You're telling me that the best way to do that is to pop that little card out of there, slip it into the side of the computer, do the acquisition stuff on the computer, take the card back up and put it back in the thing. Are you kidding me? They're plugging a cable. Like, what is, I don't understand. This is like pros complaining on behalf of other pros. Cause actually most of the people complaining aren't the pros. They're the ones trying to, you know, they just can't stand it. And so they're like, what about the photographers? You know, like Apple's leaving the photographers behind. I don't know. I to me, some of this stuff seems a little overblown. The one thing I guess I do sort of agree with, and this is maybe just a problem in the diversity of the lineup, is the MacBook Pro in many ways is not a pro device for other reasons, right? Like that touch strip thing is not necessarily something that pros need for almost anything. Like it's not a pro thing. It's almost like something that should be on a consumer laptop.
Yeah.
Instead of being on a pro device, you know? And I guess you could make that kind of argument, like when it comes to pro stuff, like pro devices by nature should have more ports, you know, blah, 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 whatever. I think what they should have done is, you know, position the low end version as a MacBook Air replacement and priced it accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then had a version above what we've seen that does have, I don't want to say legacy ports, but, you know, common sense ports, right? Like Apple always goes a little too far.
They always do. I mean, they've always done. So here's my gripe with this. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
A lot of people complain about the SD slot. I'm one of these people that uses mine all the time.
You're kidding me.
All the time.
What?
I use it constantly because I transfer files from one thing to another. I have a lot of documents on an SD card. But again, I'll give an example.
I've been talking about having SD, micro SD, and devices for years. And the truth is,
you never used it.
I use it.
Okay. But if I use it as much as I normally use it, which is twice a week, right? Which is probably way more than most people. I'm okay with getting a dongle. I'm totally fine. And you know what? It would benefit me to get some sort of dongle that does does SD and micro SD because I could take it and put it on all my devices. It doesn't matter. That's not something that affects me. Here are the things that really bother me about this device and it bothered most Mac users. Right. I'm going to tell you right now. Okay, you see what I'm holding up right now?
I know what you're going to say.
Do you see this?
Oh, okay.
Okay, this is the extender for the power. So
yeah, no.
This normally comes with like the plug-in and you just plug it in. So nobody ever uses the regular one. They use the extender.
Well,
it doesn't come with an extender.
Yeah, I was going to say some percentage uses either one.
I don't know one person that doesn't use the extender.
The whole thing.
The whole thing, because what's the point? Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you just connect the long one rather than the short one? I don't understand why.
I actually don't like the extender on the Apple devices.
You don't.
It's inflexible.
Yeah, it is inflexible. For me, it works fine.
Okay.
Everybody that got it is losing their minds over the extender. They're saying like, well, what do I don't understand why this doesn't come with it.
The problem is Apple raised the price on this device, right? It's off the charts. You get less with it, like you said, and you don't get the dongle. Like, with an iPhone, they at least had the class to say, well, here's the thing you need, you know?
Yeah.
I see that. Like, I understand that argument.
It's that they've taken away things. You know, they've taken away things. Yeah. It's not that much of an upgrade other than the strip. But even if you don't get the strip, you're losing out on that extender. It doesn't come with a dongle. And I have to tell you, they're not doing a good job at informing people. Because I know people that went into that store and bought a new MacBook Pro. And they're not
really
telling
hung
people.
Up on this.
I am.
You're really hung
I
up.
I am. I really am.
I'm sorry, but I feel like people need to be educated about what they're buying. And if someone walks into an Apple store.
But if it's how who
I'm
would
sorry,
know?
You're spending $3,000 or whatever it is on one of these things and you don't know to get the connector that's going to let it work with the devices.
But
you're an idiot. Like
but it says USB 3. It says USB 3. You don't know what type C is. Nobody knows what type A and type B and none of it.
Andrew, no, no. Bad, Andrew. Bad.
I'm telling you, this is all I heard last week from people saying, I went in there and I wanted to plug my webcam in and I looked at it. There's I can't plug my webcam in. I can't plug this in. I can't plug that in. And
I just don't. You bought it. How do you not know what it is? Paul, it's like I bought a diesel, turbo diesel, because it gets an unbelievable gas mileage. How come when I put gasoline in it, it doesn't run? You know, like you bought a diesel. Like, how do you not know what you bought? I don't know.
I think it's, you know, or you know what it's more like? I don't know. I was astonished and I warned so many people about this and nobody realized that they need a converter for this. So all these people are upset. They're losing their minds. And I totally understand this. I get it because they did not do a good job at informing people. They did not do a good job.
Ooh, Apple?
When you go and buy this thing.
You're going to blame Apple?
You know what? I kind of do because 90% of people cannot fathom the fact that their computer doesn't have USB.
Jesus, dude, come on.
It's all Apple's fault.
I don't know.
It always is.
I'm sorry. We can't keep – I don't mean you and I. I mean we collectively as the audience of technology enthusiasts, whatever, cannot keep having this conversation, right? Apple went from the whatever the fat iPhone connector thing was called, whatever that was, to the Lightning connector, and people lost their shit over that. You know, we're going to USB-C now. People are losing their shit over this. Like, guys, seriously, this is nothing new. This is what I wrote. I mean,
it's very forceful.
This week.
That's the problem.
I took pictures of Ultrabooks from 2011, 2012, and both of them required dongles to do very common activities, including such things as connecting an Ethernet cable so you can have a wired connection, you know, that kind of thing. This is nothing new. This is unfortunately how progress occurs. The Asus that I bought, I can't find it. It's killing me. I can't find this little bag. But it comes with this little bag. You open it up. and there's three dongles inside of it. It's all the little pieces you need, you know. So now you have like one bag you can lose instead of three separate dongles.
So do you think manufacturers of I guess computer apparel are going to now go to USB-C or are they going to stick with USB? Yes. Or are they going to start offering the converters? Maybe that might be the answer where, you know, you buy a webcam. You buy a webcam and it has a little converter. Yeah, you have a little. What did I say?
Yeah, I think I didn't during the transition, that's what you'll see. Yeah. The Logitech C, you know, 950 or something will come out and it will be USB-C based.
Yeah.
And they'll put a dongle in there because a lot of people don't have this.
Because it's probably not good for most people. I mean, I slowly see this entire industry going to USB-C. I think it's a necessity. USB-C is the future for this type of connectivity. I get it. This is where we're headed. But would it have hurt them?
I don't think you do get it, Andrew.
Would it have hurt them to just put one freaking dongle? Just put one dongle in the thing. Just one.
Look. Guys, if you don't want to live in the bleeding edge, stop buying Apple products. Okay? I mean, seriously, we can't keep complaining about Apple. They do this all the time. If you want to take a measured step into the future, buy like an HP X-Spectre X360. It has a USB 3 port, like normal, full-size plug, and it has two Thunderbolt/USB-C ports. Done. You're all set. It does not have an SD card reader like the old one. Yeah. They did that too. I really don't think a lot of people use SD card readers, you know? Apple can't make a different version of the Pro for every little sub-target audience, you know? What about photographers? What about illustrators? What about, you know, like, come on.
It's fascinating. I mean, listen, I get it. I'm not losing my mind over this because I'm not buying one. But if I you know where I would lose my mind? You know when I would be pissed off? If I went in there and I wasn't really informed, because most people that go and buy these things
You're really hung up on the story.
I am, because I thought it would have been... it would have been a non-issue. I thought it was just me thinking this, and I got the exact response
back in time. Okay. Yeah. 2012. Windows 8 was coming out in that fall. Apple was rumored to be making a 15-inch MacBook Air. And I said to myself, if they release this thing, I'm going to buy it, because I want a 15-inch device like that. And they didn't really have any at the time.
Did you get upset?
Yeah, because what they announced was a 15-inch MacBook Pro, which is the one they're now replacing finally, which was super expensive, super expensive. And I couldn't afford it. There was no way I was going to buy something like that. So what I ended up buying was the Samsung 15-inch Ultrabook that came out that year later. I bought that one instead. That's what I bought. And, you know, we've been looking for Apple to make this 15-inch MacBook Air since 2012. Well, guess what? They just made it. Except they're calling it a MacBook Pro, and people are losing it, you know? But I think that, you know, Macs, like any PCs, are used less for kind of mainstream purposes. And we can kind of make fun of the touch strip thing, and we can kind of talk about how it's not really applicable to a lot of people. But it targets that same market that Microsoft is targeting with Surface Studio, which is the creator thing. Yeah. These things are for content creators. I mean, most people, there's so many things I got wrong with this device that I think are much bigger deals, like the keyboard. Terrible.
So terrible. So that's that. You know what's really
I've heard
funny?
It again and again.
I'm going to tell you something. Terrible. I don't ask, like, I'll give an example. I love IaaS, right? But IaaS has a point of view like we do when it comes to stuff like this. It's not.
But he's an insane person.
He's an insane person, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, so
he has a point of view, but
it's just insane. I can't go to IaaS and be like, "What do you think of the keyboard?" Because he may, you know, look at it like we would look at it. I've asked regular users, "What do you think of the keyboard?" Yep. And and I said, "Well, how does it compare to the other one?" And they don't understand the question. They're like, "Oh, it's fine."
I'm actually surprised to hear that.
I was very surprised. I was waiting for this thing.
The most polite thing I've ever heard anyone say in a review was, well, it is better than the MacBook. But that's an incredibly low bar. You know, the MacBook typing experience is terrible.
Yeah. But is it worse than the MacBook Pro? Because the MacBook Pro is pretty decent, the keyboard. I generally enjoy the keyboard on this thing. Is it the new
MacBook Pro? It is.
The
it
new
is
versus the old, yeah.
Yeah, it's worse.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yep. And that's another example of them taking something away. They had kind of nailed the typing experience. I mean, they didn't invent island-style keys, but kind of formalized the design that every Ultrabook, you know, and now laptop maker has copied. And, you know, they usually work pretty well. And now they don't, you know. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting. Aside from, so here we are. It's like 4 years later. They finally released the form factor I was asking for. The version I would want, I think it costs $2,800. It is a keyboard I can't type on. It is a touch strip I can't use in Windows. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just, there's no, I can't buy this thing. Like, yeah. I would never buy this thing. It makes no sense at all.
You know, I was very excited to buy a new MacBook Pro that I was, you know, I was waiting for the old, because I had to replace my 2012. Yeah. And I was like, shit, man, you know, I just bought this thing. It's like $1,500, $1,600. No, it was like $2,000. What am I saying? I spent all this money on this thing, and the new one's coming out. I'm going to feel like crap, and I don't feel like crap. I really don't. I don't feel like I'm missing out. And I saw them in person. It's a very nice laptop, but I don't feel like I'm missing out on this, you know, this new device. It's not, it's, I mean, for me, the keyboard is what I really need, and the keyboard is not as good. The trackpad is a little bigger, but still the same thing.
I hate
the display is the same exact thing. The display is the same exact thing. It doesn't have USB on it.
I don't care about that. You know, I would love to have the old MacBook Pro 15 inch, but in this body, you know, like this thinness, like that's, you know, this is the, what I've been talking about. This is the thing I've, you know.
Okay. I got a question for you. People are asking, what is the best laptop keyboard on a new generation Windows laptop? What would you say from the things that you've used? I would still say Lenovo. What would you say?
Yeah.
Lenovo. Yeah. Always been. Always been. It's seriously I'm not talking about, you know, like the ThinkPads. I'm not talking about like the lower end. Well, I don't know. Maybe they've changed it, because I have an older ThinkPad that's just like a regular keyboard. But
oh yeah, no, they've changed it. So they.
IdeaPad. IdeaPad. The IdeaPads are not great.
It depends on the some they can be okay, but the ThinkPads are superior, and they used to have like the full keys, and as those island style keys became popular, they started working on new keyboard designs with the ThinkPad Edge, I think was the first, the ThinkPad E, the whatever that line is. And now across the X1 Carbon, the X1 Yoga, et cetera, they have these kind of low profile keys, but they're the best in the industry.
So I have a question. What's a T series for Lenovo?
So Lenovo, like so many PC makers, has too many versions of computers. Before there were Ultrabooks, the T series was their thin and light, and then they also have like the S models, which is like the M3 model, right?
Okay.
So you could get like a T. I don't know what the models are at today, but let's say you could get something called a T450. A T450 would be like an ultra portable computer, but then there would be a T450S, which would be even thinner and lighter.
Where can I buy a classic ThinkPad? I want it to look exactly like the one I had in like 2005.
Well, actually, like a T-Series would probably be the closest.
I remember that they were redoing it a couple of years ago, right? They were going to have one that's like the classic with like new components.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, that I'm not sure. But honestly, the best portable laptop experience is almost certainly an X1 Carbon. If you want a traditional.
There's nothing that comes close. And I'll tell you, that little nubbin thing, I love.
Oh, it's the best.
I love it.
Oh, and by the way, even if you don't like the nubbin thing, their trackpads are fantastic.
And you could pop it out.
The fingerprint reader is awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very much considering one, to be honest.
Yeah. I looked this up the other day, by the way.
Oh,
so like a base, like an i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 120 gig, no touch, full HD display, fingerprint reader, X1 Carbon, and it was $1,100. And I was like, you know,
let's see this. Hold on.
That's a good price for that.
Yeah, I'm on the website right now. Let's see. Fourth generation.
It's like 1187.
So. What CPU did you have? i7 or i5?
No, just the base one. Core i5.
i5, yeah. Yeah, 1100, yeah. You got an i7. Let's say you want to go with an i7. You go with an i7 660U.
So if you want to, if you want to go to town on this thing, you have to upgrade to an i7. Then you can go up to 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
You get, I think, you get faster SSD, if I'm not mistaken.
You do,
and you can get a, I think it's for a 1440p screen.
The speed for the SSD is the same speed. Oh no! Wait a minute. No, you're right. Yeah, it's a faster SSD. $1,400. 1461 with a 256 SSD. That's super fast.
Remind me again, what's the starting price of a Surface Book, and why the frick would anyone ever buy a Surface Book?
this thing is awesome.
Like, I, you know, 14-inch screen. It's beautiful.
Yeah, this is actually a beautiful device. Laptop. Yeah.
Yep.
This would be my laptop. I'm a big ThinkPad fan. I had it in 2003, my first ThinkPad, and I fell in love with it. Still to this day, I absolutely love it. Guys, that's it for this week. Go to our website, gfknetwork.com. You can subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Look at this. I'm on my second beer now. I'm having a Sam Adams Rebel IPA.
I'm going to take a nap when we're done here. I actually, I got up at like 5 o'clock in the morning today. I was so freaked out over a couple things. I had a travel snafu.
The election.
And then the election. Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, I was at the door when they opened.
Were you really? How many people were there? Yeah. Were there people waiting?
Oh, there were dozens. Yeah, right around the corner.
Yeah. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to the podcast. Also, go sign up for therot.com, The Rot Premium. It's a great gift for yourself. You could gift yourself this for the holiday season. $64 for the year. You get access to all this stuff, the premium forum, First Ring Daily Podcast, full access to the content on therot.com, and a whole lot more. Go to Therot Premium, therot.com/therot-premium. Just go to therot.com and click on the Join Premium tab on the top. Guys, you can follow me on Twitter @AndrewZarin. You can follow Paul @TheRot, and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now.